Okay, I eventually have a point of clarification about maybe what to do with the motion, but we had a bunch of people on the stack. We had Arlene and we had Bill. So let's
do
the stack and okay, and see where we end up. Arlene?
Just stepped away for a second. The next person can go ahead.
Okay, Bill.
Okay, sorry.
Bill?
I guess I would be willing to go up some on the projected grant income if we decrease the, cut off a couple of fundraise days in April, because by fundraising is by April.
November, we're talking about.
Well, the trouble is that you won't know in November if you get the grant, but if by April, you'll probably know if you're going to get the grants by the end of the year, end of the fiscal year. And so if the April days are questionable, then that's something that the management could have more easily control over, you know, just decide to put it back in or not. And so if the grants aren't coming in as projected, then they could put the add an extra fund drive day or two. Does that make sense?
Well, actually, I would disagree with you, and I'll tell you why, but okay. Arlene, are you back?
Just a second. Keep going.
Bye. Okay, we had Kim, and I think we had Campbell. Kim?
I know that other stations have development directors. I would ask for comparison purposes how much grant money they've raised to get an idea of what's able out there. That would seem like a good marker.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's KPFA's birthday, perhaps the April 15th date is logical and an okay idea. I think putting another fund drive next to the PRA fund drive is not a good idea. So I don't know how that fits into the mix, but
right. That was part of what I was trying to kind of piece together.
Right.
Okay. Campbell, I think you were on the stack, or maybe I was hallucinating.
Yes. Okay.
Oh, you were. Okay.
The point that I would make is in support of what several people have been saying, and that is if the birthday, even though it's April 15th, when people are probably not thrilled in writing checks,
right,
is something that is special for KPFA, then you know I think it's ludicrous to think that we can do something that historically has been valuable to them. So I wouldn't, say that undermine what treasurer from KPFA is recommending in this regard.
Okay. Arlene, are you back yet?
Yeah, I'm back. I just had a quick question. So you're saying that donations of under $1,000 are going to increase by approximately 50%?
That is where things currently stand, unless we were to make Ken's adjustment, and I think that is meant as a development staff goal. If you'd like to question it now.
I'm questioning that. First of all, if we have a new development director, I wouldn't. My choice in working with somebody like that would be that they'd be working with more major things than the donations that are under $1,000. That they'd be working with major donors, with grants, and with also events that might increase listenership. So I just have some concerns there. I also would like to say that I agree with Barbara and others that have spoken up about the April 15th. I think there's a good point to be made there that's a tradition here. And it looks to me like, from what I'm hearing, that there aren't plans to hire a development director until they have a permanent manager in place. So by the time they get a development director in place, we're probably going to be 6 months into the year. The fundraising consultant right now is working with them, I think, about an hour a month. It's to give some ideas, but it's not a major, major consultant project.
Right. Yeah.
That's my input.
Sounds good. Barbara, you're next.
Well, this is a short personal picture of the idea of writing a check on April 15th. I find that I am drawn to the action of writing some check to somebody that I would rather give money to whenever I have to pay a distasteful bill. So I think a lot of people do that.
I like that, Barbara.
Yeah.
Okay. So, all right. So we're getting some consensus on some things, which is great.
Lavarne?
Right. That's who was on the staff. Go.
Okay. I'm looking at the assumptions here, and it has the December fundraiser 2 days and November fundraiser 2 days. And I think that, you know, again, the 18th and 19th, I think, are not good days. But what happened last year was that those 2 days in November were held together with in December. And that four-day fundraiser for KPFA raised 5 days, because 1 day was the WikiLeaks. But 5 days, it raised $365,000 over the 5 days. And it brought in a fulfillment rate of 89.34%, which is the highest of the last, I don't know, 5-7 fundraisers. So,
right.
You know, basically, I think the timing that it just repeated what was in the budget last, or the prior year, and that those 2 days really need to be in December. And I'm not sure why that says only 2 days and it's $187,000. So maybe they mean for those days to be in December. So maybe they raised $365,000 last year for 5 days. So I wouldn't put it at that level, but I would say maybe do 5 days at somewhere between $250,000 and $300,000. Or 4 days. No, don't add a day. Just put 4 days at $250,000 or so.
And 4 days in December?
And can you do some quick math as to what that does to the overall account, $5,000?
Well, you know, what we could do is that we could just say four days in December and add the 66 that you have in November to December, and you would get the same.
Okay.
So that's $252,000 or so.
So you're not really reducing the account $5,000 at all.
No, no.
You're just
moving stuff
from month to month.
And I think, but it would. I think there's a possibility of overachieving that based on last year's raising of $365,000 in 5 days. That you could do $250,000 in 4 days.
Okay, well, I'm going to try to do some feedback crunching fairly soon if there's nobody else on the stack. Is there anyone else who feels like they have a point they want to bring into this discussion? Okay. So it sounds to me like we want to keep in a 15th, and that basically the assumption for December is only 2 days, and we're comfortable moving the December sort of projections out of November into December, holding the 2301, 252 number for listener support. It sounds like we have a consensus that we want to take account 5011 down to the actuals, which look to be around 60,000, not 90,000 or 86,000. So that's a $25,000 reduction. We're comfortable with our CPB figures. I think the two things that we need to sort of tamp down is the grant income figure, $5,800, which is speculative. What we want to have in there, $50,000, $25,000, or zip. And we need to get to a donations at $1,000 less note that we're comfortable with. It sounds like we think the $156,000 that was in there was high. So I think those are the two accounts that we need to sort of settle. If we are agreed on the website income reduction, that's our total to $3.588 million.
Barbara for the stack.
So could we get some feedback specifically around account 5800 and account 5001?
This
yes,
is Ken.
Barbara?
Stack.
Okay. I hear you. Barbara, you're first.
Well, I'm very sorry I don't have all the examples laid out in front of me to refer to, but I'm pretty certain that our website income outside of fund drives was 80 to 90,000 by actuals. Am I wrong about that, Tracy? You've got all that stuff in front of you.
I've got the figure that Maria put down for estimated end of the year at not quite 58,000.
It looks like it has gone down
for this year.
From what we did in 2009 and 2010. That's what we're hearing.
Okay, well, that's one of the first things I'm going to check tomorrow.
Yeah, that's fine, but that's what I've got on this spreadsheet
that
she sent out with her estimates for the end of the year.
Okay.
Okay, I had Ken on the stack, and I have Kim on the stack, and again, if possible, we're trying to drill down on these two accounts, 5,800 and 5,001, before we move to expenses. And it is, you know, almost getting on 10 o'clock on the East Coast, and we got still a lot of work to do, guys, so let's try to stay focused.
This is Ken, very briefly. I just want to say I accept as a friendly amendment any adjustments in which accounts to adjust, as long as we bring the anticipated revenue down by 150,000 or so.
Yeah, so far we still have some distance to go to get there. Kim? But thank you for that flexibility. That's great.
I'd like to repeat my request to hear other grant income from our sisters who have development directors.
Okay. Anybody?
Well, Bill, maybe Jim can help me. With KPFT, we got a $50,000 grant. It's actually just 2 years to get that. The first application was rejected. They gave some suggestions. We modified it, sent it back the next year. We got it. And then we got another $10,000 grant last year, Jim? Or for this fiscal year?
About the other 10. I know the 50, that was a
50 was from Houston Endowment for marketing.
Yeah, that was a targeted grant.
Right. And then, but we had actually hired a couple of consultants back last spring of last year, that wrote up about 8 grant proposals. And those two are the ones we got. And one of them was a repeat from the $50,000 was a repeat from the year before. And we had a relationship with Houston Endowment, so that helped us. We had a $25,000 grant we had gotten from them about 3 years ago.
Okay. Anyone else want to respond to Kim's request?
Well, Ms. Bruce, I can tell you what it's kind of like a WPFW. But, of course, you have to understand that in our situation, our development director has been in place for a number of years. So there's a history there. So she has a pretty good idea going into each year, you know, what her expectations are going to be for receiving grant money. I mean, she's besides, you know, going after new grants, you know, she has an idea of things. You know, usually they're like arts grants and things like that, and some of them are larger, some of them are, you know, smaller, but that's how we come up with an estimate of what we expect our grant money to be for the coming year. And, you know, it's fairly accurate. So, you know, in listening to this discussion, I realize that, you know, at KPFA, it sounds like you don't have a history. So it's a little hard to know what you're
right.
going to give me.
Not for many years.
Year. And I know people have been saying that, and that's true. It's what you're really looking at is first, you know, laying the groundwork, and you're probably not going to be that much. But on the other hand, I don't know for sure what's going on there. And if there are, like, local state or, you know, city or county grants or arts foundations or something that are out there that they can go after, you know, they may very well, you know, pick up something.
This is Kim.
Yeah.
I just, Bruce, as I recall, you had actuals of $10,000 in grants last year.
Actuals?
Yeah. And we allowed up to 17 for this coming year. That was my recollection.
Oh, no, I have to look at it. That sounds low. I think our grants, because, I mean, we have grants that are, you know, higher than that just in one grant alone. No, I think it's, but Actually, I thought it was more like in the 75,000 range that we had estimated. So I don't know what we're coming in at the end of this year.
Well, I'll take a look while we're moving on.
I may be wrong. I don't have it in front of me. So
okay, I'll look it up.
And we're talking about 2011, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Guys.
Yeah, but it's got to be higher.
What?
Yeah,
okay.
Higher.
Now, we need a motion here. So if we're looking at what Ken set up, the decisions that we've now made, in order to get to that number, if that is the number that we're trying to get to, we would have
repeat
to
repeat that number again, please.
Approximately $3.5 million total revenue.
Okay.
We would need to cut all the speculative grant income of $51,000 back, and we would need to cut $25,000 from the account 5001, the smaller donations account. If we feel that that is basically, as Jim put it, almost disincentivizing development efforts, we could cut smaller amounts and settle in at about somewhere between 3.5 and 3.55. Personally, I would advocate for coming in at about 3.55.
Madam Chair,
I think that's reasonable. But basically, that's the decision that we have to make right now with regard to those two accounts. Basically, the maximal level cut or a minimal level cut. I don't really want to bring a motion. I'm hoping that we'll kind of arrive at a consensus about what's sensible, but as a time check, we really do need to make that decision pretty much right now. Campbell, you're up.
Yes, very briefly. The point that I wanted to make is that, you know, this isn't something that's done in isolation. When you cut the revenues, you're also cutting the expenses. You're cutting the capacity that the station will have to achieve these results that they're, you know, looking at trying at achieving. And I think that, you know, we need to keep that in mind as well and not be penny wise and pound foolish in this regard.
Okay. Does anyone have a concrete suggestion to make right now?
My concrete suggestion would be to leave it as is.
Well, Bill.
Bill, you're next.
Well, to start with what Ken had and lower the non-fund drive web income by $25,000 and cut $40,000 from the category 5001, the less than $1,000 donations category. That would cut $65,000. So that's sort of a compromise.
Okay, so you're suggesting cut.
I feel more comfortable cutting the grants in half, but if the rest of you don't want to do that, then we can.
So you feel comfortable making a cut on the account 5001. You're saying $40,000. That would take that to about $125,000. And that would bring the total revenue number to?
Reduce it by $65,000 total, if we leave the grants the way they are.
That takes us to a number of approximately $3.557 million, give or take. I'm comfortable with that, speaking for myself. I know that's less than you wanted, Ken. Are there other folks on the committee that have opinions one way or the other?
Is this Jim?
I'm
going back to the grant. I think that should be cut somewhat. That's it. You know, I think
you think what should be cut somewhat? You think what should be cut? What should be cut somewhat?
It's 51.
51, and what would you suggest cutting it down to?
I was going more towards you and Kim in the 25, 15, in that range.
In the 25 range, okay.
Kim to the stack or point of information. I'm looking on the PFW budget for the year 2012. They have $17,950 in. For FY11, it's $10,500, and for audited 2010, it's $10,650.
Okay.
So this is a full-time development director person, $10,000.
Mm-hmm.
So that's, you know, somewhere between there and what T is doing, but if you split 50,000 into 2 years for 25K, I mean, I don't know.
Okay, so here's where we are. If we cut 5,001, right, down to, if we cut 5,000, okay, if we cut account 5,001 down by $25,000, give or take, we cut account 5,800 by $25,000, give or take, and we hold the cut on account 5011 down from $86,000 down to about $60,000, we end up with a total revenue number of 3.53.
Could you repeat all those, please?
All right. This is the cuts that we would be making, in addition to the CPP cut that we made on Tuesday. Account 5011 drops from $86,000 to $60,000, which is approximately the anticipated actuals for this year.
86 to 60.
Maria's number was apparently 57, but 60 is close enough. On account 5001, we drop from the projection of $156,000 down to $125,000, leaving us total donations, the two donation accounts, of about $235,000. And then in account 5800, which is speculative, we drop from $51,000 back to $25,000. So we incentivize our development staff to get a grant, but we keep it to the $25,000 range. If we do those things, which sounds sort of like the consensus of the committee, then we end up with a total revenue figure of 3.531.779 or something like that. It'll be $3.53 million. With our current revenue as it's in the spreadsheet, that leaves us with a $190,000 deficit. But I also want to be clear that the LSB-approved budget had another $97,000 in cuts, so we would be able to half that sort of right away, and then we would need to look at where the other $100,000, give or take, would come from. That's what we would be looking
point
at for our next couple of hours. So I think I'll go to you in just a second, Barbara, that if nobody screams really loud, I'm going to leave that on the table as an amendment to Ken's motion. And now the screaming can ensue, and Barbara, you're up.
I promise not to scream.
Okay, somebody will.
I just didn't clearly hear what you said about the $190,000 deficit is left after this proposed set of reductions.
Oh, actually,
and
that's
you said,
before capital.
The thing I want to ask about is,
yep.
You said that's about something in relationship to something that the LSB voted for?
Oh, yeah. Well, let me correct myself. I did not include the capital expenses, and you need to, so it is a bigger deficit. It's $260,000 if we make that level of cuts. In terms of the LSB...
That wasn't what you said a minute ago. I wanted to...
Yeah, I'm saying the 190 figure didn't include capital. I made a mistake. I didn't scroll down, so the deficit size we're looking at is $260,000. What I am saying is that the LSB's approved budget of August 20th does include an additional $97,000 in cuts that were later reversed, and we could certainly draw we could certainly draw upon those for some of this deficit,
right.
But it's not going to cover all of it. So, okay, conversation.
I'm going along with Tracy.
Ken just back. I'd like to move the agenda and call the question as the motion as you last stated it. Let's just vote on it and go forward.
Woo-hoo. Okay. Any objections to calling the question?
Point of order.
Sure.
You can't call the question in the committee.
Well, okay. Any objections to the idea of moving ahead with a vote?
Not an objection, but we need to probably nail down the wording a little bit here.
What do you suggest, Paul?
To do that.
What do you suggest to get where we want to go, which is like
take a vote.
Well, yeah, we can take a vote, but before that, why don't we let me read the two things I have. We have Ken's motion, I think I have it, and we have something from Tracy, which is a sort of proto-amendment. And so why don't I read Ken's motion and what I think is Tracy's amendment. How about that?
Yes, and then we'll go through the process of amending the motion and then voting on the amended motion if it passes.
We'll see what we do. All
right.
Ken, I have. The motion is that the total KPFA FY12 revenue be lowered to $3.5 by cutting down $51,000 from grant income, account 5800, lower non-on-air fundraiser web account 5011 by about $25,000, reduce additional $40,000 from the less than $1,000 category, account 5001, and here from 156 to 116. So the way it's worded here is
part of information.
LaVarn, can you wait until our Paul finishes reading?
Oh, thank you.
So the last bit is not like the other bit. All right. Okay, first part is be lowered to $3.5 million. Okay, we got that. By cutting down $51,000 from account 5800. Okay, account 50. So that's take $51,000 from account 5800.
Yes.
Right? Okay. Lower non-on-air fundraising account 5011 by, I'm going to take out about and just say 25K.
To $60,000. Adjust it to $60,000. Say that.
Lower the $260,000. How about reduce account 50.1 to 116?
No, 120. Well,
that's
it's Ken's motion rather than my motion, but let's keep them consistent and reduce it to 125.
Okay, so that makes the motion say that the total KPFA FY12 revenue be lowered from $3.5 million by cutting down $51,000 from grant income account 5800, lower non-on-air fundraiser web account 5011 to $60,000, and reduce account 5001 to $125,000.
Right. And the amendment that I am making then is very simple. The amendment that I am adding is to restore $25,000 to account 5800. And we can get my amendment down to one sentence, which is great.
Okay, so it's restore account 5800 to
$25,000.
Right. Instead of restore, you would make, say, make account.
Right. Leave in account, leave in $25,000 in account 5800.
Make account 5800, 25,000?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Now, 5800 up there is, okay, so instead of cutting 5800 to zero, which is what the main motion does, you want to cut it down to 25,000.
26.
Right.
Okay. All right. I got this.
Whatever.
Okay. Let's put this stuff into where we're going so that we can get a bit. Okay. So I had to put that in a separate sheet. One second.
Okay. So that makes it fairly simple, and so the amendment doesn't go on until the end of
it. Okay.
I think it's clear what the difference is between the amended motion and the motion. LaVarn, what's your point of order?
I'm sorry. I couldn't hear R. Paul, but afterward I could hear him fine. Thank you.
Oh, okay. All right.
I'm not hearing any violent objections about moving to a vote. So, R. Paul, if you would like to go ahead and call the roll on the amendment to Ken's motion.
Okay, the amendment is to make account $5,825,000. Okay.
Call the roll on that.
Ken Aaron.
Yes. I'm not, wait. Hold it a minute. I pass. Go ahead.
Okay, pass. Jim Boyd.
Yes.
That's a no?
Yes.
Okay, I'm going to call
it again. Yes, that's a no, or no, that's a yes.
Oh, hold on.
I think that's just a yes.
I'm going to call Jim again. Jim?
I'm for the amendment.
Yes. Okay. Bill Crozier.
Yes.
Campbell Johnson.
Pass.
Kim Kaufman.
Yes.
R. Paul Martin. I want to abstain. Tracy Rosenberg.
Yes.
Alex Steinberg.
I'm going to abstain, too.
Barbara Wipperman.
Yes.
LaVarne Williams.
Abstain.
Bruce Wolf.
Yes.
Okay, going back. Ken Aaron.
Yes.
Campbell Johnson.
Abstain.
Okay, and I have everyone. 7-4-0 against 4 abstentions.
Fabulous. We now have a main motion as amended. We just read it a moment ago. So I think that we are ready to go to a vote on the main motion as amended.
Okay, give me a second here. Okay, the main motion will then read. Okay, I'm just getting the wording here to be right because they're two different ways. 5,800 will be 25K. Cutting. This and write it in there. Okay. The motion as amended, that I have it, reads that the total KPFA FY12 revenue be lowered to $3.5 million by cutting down grant income account $5,800 to $25,000. Pardon me. Lower non-on-air fundraiser web account $5,011. To $60,000, reduce account 5001 to $125,000. That's what it is, right? We all agree that's what it is? Okay. All right. Ken Aaron. Ken Aaron?
Yes.
Jim Boyd?
Yes.
Bill Crozier?
Yes.
Campbell Johnson?
Abstain.
Pardon me. Kim Kaufman.
Yes.
R. Paul Martin. Yeah. Tracy Rosenberg.
Pass.
Alex Steinberg.
Pass.
Barbara Wipperman.
Yes.
LaVarne Williams.
Abstain.
Bruce Wolf.
Yes.
One second. Pardon me as I cough all over the place. Okay, going back. Tracy Rosenberg.
Yes.
Alex Steinberg.
Yes.
Okay, I think I have everybody. 940 against, 2 abstentions.
Okay. All right, so that's it, folks. No revisiting it. That's what we're doing on the revenue side of the ledger. Now, on the expenses side of the ledger, there's a lot of things to look at and a limited amount of time. What I'm going to suggest is I'm going to start by sort of bringing to the table the cuts that the local station board had already approved in an earlier version of the budget and tell you what those are. I think unless there's major objections to them since they were part of a unanimously passed LSB budget, it would make sense to kind of start there. So I'm hoping that maybe we will use that as our starting point and then look at what else we need to do. But let me explain to you what they are and what impact they have, and then we will look at additional questions and comments. And I know there were several people on the committee that had all kinds of comments about the expenses, and we'll have to work through those. Those cuts are, as I recall, there are three of them. The first is on account 6665, which is the computer maintenance account. And it involved reducing the consulting fee that KPFA has been paying by the amount of $50,000. And again, this was an LSB-approved cut, and that brought that number down to 12,470 from the 62 that it's currently showing at. That's number one. Number two has to do with property tax and an expected refund in the amount of, I believe it was $25,000. That was expected to be gotten from previous property tax filings. And I believe that we were offsetting that against property tax expense. I'll have to figure out how to put that in, but there's $25,000 there as well. So if we have $6,700 here, we would offset that with a minus $25,000. The third involves the level of the gross salaries in account 6,000. An amount of approximately $27,000 was put back in there when we thought that we had a bonanza that involved the restoration of some hours that had previously been cut. And since we no longer have that jackpot, and the LSB had approved an overall personnel cost number that was 1.912 rather than the 1.933 that's in there now. So presumably we have to kind of offset back to the number that we were at. Those were the LSB approved.
Can you repeat those two numbers again? 1.912.
1.933 million. This is the bottom line. 1.933. The number that had been in the LSB approved budget was 1.912.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So it's not huge reduction, but it's slight. If we go along with that set of LSB cuts, then our surplus after cap, I'm sorry, our deficit after capital is $234,000, which is not small. So are there any strong objections to reinstating those cuts and then going from there?
Barbara for the stack.
Okay, Barbara.
Well, I know it's late, but I would like to discuss the whole business of having the depreciation in the budget.
Yeah, we're going to have to discuss it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
I think it's inappropriate. And I realize that LaVarne, you know, wants it there and thinks it is appropriate. And so I just feel that it is not it's not a cash account. And as someone has pointed out to me, it's listed in expenses. And so it's, who are we paying these expense to? It's just inappropriate to have it there. I'm not saying we shouldn't keep those figures in mind, but they don't belong in the budget. That's my feeling about it.
Point of information.
Yes, Lauren?
I believe we voted on this in the last...
We didn't actually vote on this, no.
We didn't?
We only voted on the CPB, so we do need to discuss it.
Arlene, to the staff.
In the meantime, I'll try to find GAAP and all of those accounting rules, and maybe that will help.
That would be great. I also, I don't know if this is too much work, and I don't want to get outside the scope of what we can do in this meeting, but if it's in your head or is easily accessed, I think it might help the committee to talk a bit about what we're depreciating in terms of assets that's getting us to that number.
May I answer on one of those? I think we have that information. Arlene has, and she had pulled it up. But I would ask also each person if they could look at the audit report, and they'll see the profit and loss statement, and you will see depreciation on there. So I don't even have to go to GAAP or anything. You can just look at your audit statement. You'll see it on the audit statement as an expense for the income.
That is correct. Arlene, we're next on the stack. Arlene, and then Barbara.
I'll be real brief, but that's the point I was going to make. That last year, one of the things that threw some of our stations into deficit that wouldn't have been at the end of the year, and it contributed to a very negative statement from the auditor, is the fact that we had not taken depreciation into account, and so consequently, every unit except the archives ended up in a deficit last year, some worse than others, but that's what we need to avoid. So whether we include it in the budget or not, we've somehow got to account for the fact that that's going to be subtracted for, or included as an expense at the end of the year as part of our audit.
Which means that our surplus would need to encompass that amount one way or the other, if we didn't have it as a line item. Yeah.
Budget per se, but we've got to have enough dollars there to account for it.
Okay. Barbara, you're next.
Well, I think I'm sorry I don't mean to correct you, Arlene, but I don't think it's an expense. It's a reduction of our value of our assets. And
well, it is indeed, but they show it as an expense.
Well, in a balance sheet account, and the whole thing about of depreciation is a commonly used accounting thing that for-profit organizations, companies use to correctly pay a correct amount of tax on the assets that they own. And it's, you buy something, you pay sales tax at the time you buy it. But as you accumulate assets, things that are not expendable every day, you then have to still pay every year on the value of those assets, tax to some government entity, usually the state. And if you can't depreciate them, you then are just paying more tax than they're worth. So depreciation is a concept used, and things are not depreciated forever. Something that you buy, the value goes down a little bit one year, and a little bit more the next year, and a little bit more the next year. And so the depreciation then lowers the amount of tax you pay on that item. This has nothing to do, really, with this cash accounting. It is true that the value of the whole organization is measured also in the value of its assets. And I'm not saying that we should just ignore it, but I think it's totally inappropriate in the budget.
Okay. This is Tracy. I'm going to put myself on the stack. I hear LaVarne. Is there anyone else who wants to weigh in?
Arpal.
Okay. I'm going to let Arpal go first.
Thank you.
Because he hasn't. I'm sorry. We'll get to you, I promise.
Okay. Oh, no.
All right. I'm sort of agreeing with Barbara to a degree here. I understand the depreciation happens and it lowers our net worth. But in terms of a station's budget, it's not like we're taking, if you depreciate your you know, something or others, your land, your building, your old tape recorders, by $50,000, that doesn't mean that you're taking $50,000 of your income and throwing it somewhere. And so I think that, you know, it should go on the audit and all that, because that's the way they do these things, and it depreciates your stuff until it's down to zero. I'm sure that WBAI's equipment is pretty close to zero as it is, and I don't think you could depreciate it much more unless you start depreciating it negatively. So I'm really thinking here that it shouldn't go against income. I mean, and that's what we do. Our expenses are put against our income, and we see which one comes
down.
I'm thinking that although the auditors need this, we don't need to kill stations with it, unless we've got like depreciations of $1,000 or something, and then the hell with it, it's not worth talking about. But if it's substantial depreciation, which it looks here and there like it is, I think it's a burden to a radio station, and it's something we should seriously think about, you know, not lowering, you know, not taking out of our income. So that's my thought.
Okay, I'm going to go.
Down before Stan.
Oh. Arlene to the staff.
Yeah, well, it's good. We have to settle this. It's a big item. Lavarne, you wanted to go, then we'll go to the rest of the stack.
Yeah, just kind of like real simple. At some point in time, a purchase was made of that asset. And that amount that was spent did not hit your income statement. It was not shown as an expense. So how you account for that and how the government allows you to do this, it's a little feature that the government used to encourage business and to encourage purchasing and to keep the economy going. So that's what you're doing. And therefore, there's a requirement that you show that as an expense called depreciation over that so-called life of that asset that you purchased. This is not, you know, nothing that we make up. This is not a convenience. This is a requirement of the accounting rules. Very simple.
Okay. I'm going to go to, I heard Bill Campbell and Arlene, myself and Barbara are also on the stack, but we'll try to prioritize people who haven't spoken. So Bill and then Campbell.
Well, let me let Campbell go first. He's the business person.
Okay.
Yeah. As Barbara said, you aren't paying this to anybody. And the notion of depreciation was before the tax considerations was set up for the replacement of assets. And that, I expect, may be the issue that the auditor is making insofar as creating a sinking fund, in effect, so that the next time that you need, you know, when you wear out the asset, when it's exhausted its economic life, then you can have some funds to replace it. But it's still basically an offset against the asset itself. It's not something that is affecting your earnings in a way that I think we would need to engage it in so far as the budget if we understand what it is that we're doing. And, you know, I think that when we're dealing with the situation in regards to our stations, oftentimes what may have been a, you know, with the way that pace of innovation, what may have been a product that cost us like a computer, maybe $5,000 a few years ago, we could pick up for maybe $1,200 now. So, you know, with these kinds of changes in mind, I don't think that conceptually the same sort of rules apply. And I'll review the audit to see where possibly a misunderstanding may have come. Thank you.
All right. I'm going to go to Bill, and then I'm going to to Arlene, and then myself.
Okay, depreciated items are expenses, and the reason for depreciation is, I guess, kind of like Lavarne was saying, it allows you to, instead of expensing something, the whole thing when you buy it, if it's something that's going to last a number of years, like you buy a widget that's going to last 10 years, then you can have it listed as an expense, all of it in the first year, or you can depreciate it. You don't do both. And if I'm wrong, somebody please correct me. And so
assuming we did not expense those items, whatever we're listing for depreciation, assuming we didn't expense them when they were bought, then we have to depreciate them and list them over a period of years. It spreads out the expense, but we can't just ignore the expense.
Okay, I'm going to go to Arlene, then I'm going to go to myself.
Okay, if you look at pages 22 to 25 of the audit, you will find you will find depreciation and amortization under functional expenses by division for each one of our divisions. You know, whether it's included in the budget as a cash expenditure this year, or whether we make sure that we have enough revenue that's going to cover it at the end of the year. If we don't cover it, it's going to put us in a negative position at the end of the year. And if we have more negative years, that's going to be a good thing that might put us out of business. It's important that we cover that as part of our expenses, and LaVarne and Bill have offered excellent explanations of why it's there.
Arlene, do you have access there quickly to what KPFA is depreciating at this point in time, at least the big items?
It doesn't say specifically what they are on the audit report, but it's based on the way it's spread over the divisions, it has to include building depreciation.
Right, and probably does. Which we will run out on eventually, but not
required.
Right. Okay, so I'm going to go to myself and just say what I know in terms of doing nonprofit accounting when I have done it. Depreciation is a legal obligation. You do need to take account of it. It's not something that is restricted merely to for-profit organizations. And there is no doubt that under any audit or any review that our existing assets will be depreciated. So in one way or another, I'm going to support what Arlene is saying in the sense of we do have to account for the hit that depreciation is going to take. I said at the national board meeting last year when I read that audit, and I'm going to say it again, that I think KPFA Specifica's depreciation schedules are quite heavy. And I think there should be some room for a discussion with the auditor about how some of these figures are being calculated. I think some of the depreciation schedules that were set up were severe and may have somewhat overvalued some of the assets, and the numbers have always struck me as fairly high. That said, I'm not a CPA. The auditor is, and I may be wrong about that, but that's just an observation. What I am going to point out is that we are, in fact, declaring capital items as expenses in this budget. The deficit that we are trying to settle in line 50 does, in fact, include some capital expenses as outright expenses. So we are therefore not projecting profit and loss level depreciation on those particular things, which are telephone systems, computers, broadcast tech equipment, and leasehold improvements, because we are taking that money whack as an expense, and that's how we're showing it. I think that's probably correct, but it argues for, you know, what we did in the past. In other words, in order for what we're doing to be correct, including the depreciation here, there's a statement to that effect that previous capital expenses for years and years were directly subtracted from the profit and loss in the way that we're doing it right now. And that's why we have to do it. And I think that that may well be true, but I don't know for sure. So I guess the question that I have is, and this is why I kind of wanted to know what we were depreciating, because I think whether depreciation is a profit and loss item depends on whether we didn't declare those items as expenses at the time they were bought or whether we did. And I'm guessing since we've had two consecutive audits with similar depreciation figures, the answer is that we didn't, and that was probably a weakness of our previous accounting that is now costing us somewhat. But I think we do need to get clear with the auditor that we are now, in fact, as we make capital expenses, striking the full purchase amount right off of our profit and loss statement. because I don't want to engage in any sort of double counting type scenario. So I could go either way on this because I think it is partially contingent on how the accounting was done for the past 20 years on some of these assets, and it may well be that that was in fact problematic. I'll stop there, and I think Barbara's next.
I'd like to comment on a few things that people said, and one, I really, I'm sorry, disagree with your statement, Lavarne, about assets are not shown as expenses. We've just been talking about the fact that some of these capital items have been treated as expenses, so I don't think you can make a blanket statement like that. When Arlene is talking about the negative years, and those are in the audit. I'm sorry. First, I want to talk about Bill saying the assets spreading out expenses. I think maybe you're confusing the concept of accrual, because you can accrue the expenses or income, really, over time. That's not what depreciation is. Depreciation is declaring the relative shrinking of value of something that is an asset, and it's used when you have to pay tax every year on whatever the collective assets are that you own. And that really, you know, there's another thing that we probably could be talking about that's related to this whole thing that's trying to be accomplished by putting the depreciation in the budget, and that is that this whole problem of having no reserves. And I think that what Arlene was talking about, the negative years, I'm not quite sure how to relate it to what the auditors were saying, but perhaps we need to tackle this problem of not having reserves. Now, it's the same kind of a thing. We need to have money in reserve for whatever equipment we need to buy. One other comment about Tracy saying that it's a legal requirement for depreciation. It's not a legal. I don't think it's a legal requirement. I think it's an accounting tool, and it's used when a business, profit or nonprofit, calculates how much tax it has to pay on personal or real estate property that it owns, assets.
Arlene to the stack.
Correct. I heard Ken, and then I heard Arlene.
Yes. And I haven't spoken yet on this subject.
Right. So you're speaking
now. Okay, I'm up now? Okay, great.
You're on.
This is a very interesting conversation. It reminds me about a lecture on paleontology about dinosaur bones and how they evolved into flying fowl and so forth. It's very interesting. However, I feel this is out of the scope of doing a KPFA budget. I don't think this is something we can vote on. I believe the decision of whether or not to include depreciation in the balance sheet is a decision of the CFO, and it's a policy decision for management. If we don't like it, well, we'll have to take it up at some other meeting. But at this point, I don't think it's a question of opinion of the NFC that we can vote on it. I think it's a management mandate, and we can disagree with it and argue about it, but this is not an oversight. This is not an oversight. This is an intentional action by the CFO and the ED to accommodate an instruction from the auditor, and right or wrong, it's that's it. The captain has spoken. I don't think this is a votable issue as to whether or not this stays in the budget. So I don't even think a motion is required to accept it or not accept it.